This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In November, after the elections, Mayor Moreau Weinberger told VPR's Alex Keefe that he wanted to formally declare Burlington to be a so-called sanctuary city.
Our practices have been consistent with cities that consider themselves sanctuary cities. And what I think it is time for now, given the uncertainty in the community, is for us to take that step and to formalize our practices into policy. And I will be working with the city council in the weeks ahead to do that.
Sanctuary cities are communities that thumb their nose at federal regulations that require local law enforcement to work closely with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. In particular, they say they won't ask about immigration status for basic law enforcement proceedings, like stopping someone for speeding or intervening in a domestic dispute. And in many cases, city officials say they won't ask about immigration status in most official community affairs. The definition is a little squishy because there's no real official designation of sanctuary city. Mostly, communities decide or declare on their own what this means. Opponents say these policies violate federal law and increase the likelihood that dangerous criminals in the U.S. illegally will be able to stay here because they're less likely to be caught in a sanctuary city. Nonetheless, several Vermont cities have officially declared their intention to be or become sanctuary cities. Burlington, but also Winooski and Montpelier. And South Burlington is debating the question. Today on the show, we're going to talk about where they are in the process and how this could play out. And we're joined for the hour by Leslie Holman, an immigration attorney based in Burlington, who's been studying up on all this. Leslie, welcome back to the program.
It's nice to be here, Jane.
Can you go a little bit deeper into that idea of a definition, such as there is, of sanctuary city?
You know, it's funny. When I was preparing for this and doing a read, I thought, oh, away with words. Because really, there is no definition of a sanctuary city. It's policy. And what it means is that local law enforcement or municipality is going to be smart in how they deal with enforcement related to immigration.
Now, smart sounds like a judgment word to me. That doesn't sound quite – so what do you mean when you say they're going to be smart?
In other words, when, you know, just immediately you said, well, you know, there's that fear that it's going to bring about, you know, more crime. It isn't. In fact, what it does is it makes us safer. And so by looking at the people who have a dangerous criminal record or something like that, so that would be a situation when information would be provided.
And shared with ICE.
That's correct. Absolutely.
But the idea here is that somebody may be afraid to come forward if they're a victim of a crime or if they see a crime, if they're worried that their immigration status is going to become part of that investigation.
No question. And that's, you know, that's also part of the safety of the community. And that's why, I label it smart enforcement, because, you know, you're not going to come forward if you witness a crime and you feel that you're going to be targeted, you know, based on your, you know, how you look or the fact that, you know, you may not be from the United States right away. You're not going to come forward. So it's really a safety issue.
So there are other ways that some sanctuary cities also operate. So the one that you've talked about and that is most common is this idea of law enforcement, and that in most situations, law enforcement officers won't ask about your immigration status unless it's somehow germane to the investigation, or if it goes further and it's a serious crime. In most places, your immigration status can become an issue, and you can be sent to federal detention if you've committed or you're suspected of committing a violent crime, for example.
Absolutely. And you know, what you're saying is, you know, this is where it can happen and things can be looked at. So it's a sanctuary city isn't a place of hiding people. What it is saying, you know, the people that need to be discovered will be. So it's, you know, it doesn't prevent federal law enforcement from catching, you know, people that might not. Should not roam the streets.
Although that is the argument, and some people say that there are people who are able to more easily hide out who may not be here legally because they're not going to be asked about their immigration status. But beyond that, Leslie, there are other ways that sanctuary cities can operate, and some of it is in city affairs. Have you looked into how, you know, different kinds of city issues and municipal affairs and events are coordinated in sanctuary cities?
Sure. And you know, it's state and municipal, because, you know, one of the if you take it, well, and I'll start at the top and work our way down. If you look at what some states have done in the way that immigration laws are enforced, what's a crime in the state? We have seen states that make a crime that is punishable by 1 year 364 days rather than a year, because, you know, something as innocuous as shoplifting could make someone deportable. And so if – but there is a one-time – it's called a petty offense exception. If the potential violation could not result in more than a year of imprisonment. Some states have said, look, this is a way that we're not going to be targeting people who are not an enforcement priority.
So you can be deported if the crime that you're accused of committing would have a one-year sentence. And so you're saying these states will actually make the sentence 364 days, so it's not a year.
That's correct. That's correct. Also, and it has to do with, you know, there are things called detainers. So whether or not someone needs to enforce a detainer, because a detainer doesn't mean, okay, stop and we're going to hold you here. It's notification. And so there are different policies that come in effect with regard to municipalities and states and local that will either inform or you know, will not execute a detainer when there's no reason to do so.
There are also, I mean, what about when it comes to things like accessing city services or, you know, schools? There are already, as we know in this country, many children who don't have paperwork who are attending local public schools. So how does that all work in sanctuary cities?
And that makes for a really interesting, I mean, this is where you're going to boil down immigration, because it's, you know, it is a conflict between federal and state law. Under the Constitution, you know, the federal government has the right to decide issues involving immigration. However, they can only do that, you know, if a state does something that's going to be step in on their toes, it can be preempted. There are certain parts of this enforcement that don't fall under what might really be preempted by the government. So you really have an interplay of what can be enforced, whose right to do what.
We're talking today about what it means to be a sanctuary city with immigration attorney Leslie Holman, and we're talking about the four Vermont communities in the process of declaring themselves sanctuary cities. Winooski, Burlington, and Montpelier have already taken that step. South Burlington is still debating the idea. If you have a question about what this looks like in practice or you want to share your own opinion, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I apologize for my voice, but it's probably better if you ask the questions than if I do. So again, 1-800-639-2211. Leslie, when it comes to the four communities in Vermont that are in the process now of declaring themselves sanctuary cities, again, Burlington, Winooski, and Montpelier have already had votes that say, yes, this is something we want to do, and they're still working out some of the policies. South Burlington has said, yes, we want to discuss this, but has not said we want to officially declare ourselves a sanctuary city. Do you know what this means for these communities when they say we are a sanctuary city, given what we've just talked about, the idea that this is not a firm definition?
I mean, really what it is, it's a decision by the community of how they are going to deal with whether it be an undocumented population and also how they're going to respond to what the federal government may or may not do. And I think when they say wait and see, we don't know what's going to happen in January, you know, with regard to what our enforcement priorities or what may happen if with regard to funding. You know, it's an unknown. So I think, you know, again, you know, part of the issue is we have to keep everyone safe, happy, healthy. Are we going to lose rights? You know, are there going to be issues with regard to hospital access? So, you know, it's a loaded question.
Yeah.
Of unknowns.
Yeah. And we've seen this around the country that not just here in Vermont, but there are communities around the country that have declared themselves sanctuary cities since the election. We have some pushback from some of our listeners. Alpha 16 says, if these cities choose to violate federal law by aiding and abetting violations of federal laws by illegal aliens, they should be banned from receiving federal funds for any agency that is involved. The citizens of these cities can pick up the entire cost for taking care of these people. I'm sure that they won't mind an increase in their taxes. You're either a partner with federal law enforcement or you aren't. And Ryan says, why is it that Vermont and the subject cities are taking the position to stand against the laws we currently have? I understand that enforcing the law may perhaps be unconscionable in some circumstances, but it is not in the local municipality's scope to do so. Do these cities violate the rule of law and the spirit of law by being a sanctuary city? And don't these sanctuary cities pose a larger security threat to our nation in terms of being hotbeds for terrorist cells to hide? Leslie, can you respond to both of those?
You bet. And again, I'm going to break them down. But, you know, number one, the states and municipalities are not violating any law. They are working with the federal government. It depends. For example, when the federal government says this was happened with secure communities, what information might be provided? The federal government cannot force the state to provide information when someone is perhaps picked up and they are fingerprinted. The FBI has access to that, so they can do their job. And so it's really the state or municipality saying, "We'll allow you to do your job, but there are certain pieces that we don't have to do your job, if you will."
In other words, we don't have to ask about immigration status. We don't have to fingerprint somebody who's not accused or arrested for a crime, and therefore that's not complying with what ICE would like.
That's correct. So it's there really is nothing that's being violated. In fact, many say that it's allowing the federal government to do what it is they want to do, because there are certain things that are not preempted. We know what happened in Arizona, which was what could a state do as far as its options with regard to immigration. So, and again, when people say it's going to make us allow people to stay, it really isn't. That information's there. If someone commits a serious crime, they're fingerprinted. That information is there for the federal government and it's there for ICE. So it's really a matter, I think, of not having people, you've got a witness to a crime. We know that we've got a big crime, problem. We need that help. And, I think, local law enforcement wants the help of its citizens and this will allow it to happen.
When you say people are not violating any laws, however, or that it's not actually keeping people here, In some arguments, that is a tough sell because maybe a person has not committed a crime, but if they are here without documentation and the police don't ask, then they're missing an opportunity to, for example, send somebody back who is not here legally, who doesn't have the paperwork. So when you say people aren't being able to stay here, it seems like what you mean is people aren't being able to stay here if they are committing crimes, not people aren't able to stay here, period.
Well, and you actually made a good distinction. Being in the United States without authorization so that you are removable is a civil violation. It's actually not a crime. Now, if you come across the border without authorization, that could also be criminal. And so, one of the things, and you say, well, someone is here and the police see them. One thing people forget is that when someone is here that it's not documented does not mean that they committed a crime. It doesn't mean that they entered illegally, without authorization. I always, I really get scared when I don't refer to anyone as being illegal. They may not have documentation, but they have not committed a crime. And for example, if you are here, and I think you and I have actually talked about this in the past, if you're here and you make a mistake on your paperwork and you were supposed to send it in yesterday, and sometimes you don't know where the heck to send it because it's really complicated, you send it to the wrong place. It's now one day late. You're done. You are out of status. And once you are out of status, you can't be put back in status. So now you've got a person who is here working and maybe it's 5 weeks, he blows a traffic light. They see, oh, my God, you're 5 weeks over the expiration of this. Or is that really where we would want to spend our effort? Is that the person that we'd want to spend our efforts at? My answer would be no.
My understanding of the fair and impartial policing policy in the state of Vermont is that law enforcement officers already don't ask about immigration status. So why would having a declaration of sanctuary city be important to communities?
It's really to get the word out, and not to get the word out as some people may like to say is, oh, come to Winooski if you're not going to be targeted. That's not it. It's really, again, towards keeping the community safer because people are scared. A lot of statements have been made. My phone was ringing off the hook the morning after the election. It still is. And, what's going to happen? And so to relieve that level of fear and, again, not have people refuse to go and help when need be.
Our number, if you have a question for Leslie Holman, if you want to talk about the idea of sanctuary cities, is 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a comment on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Let's go to Tim, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Tim. Go right ahead.
How are you today?
Well, thanks. How about you?
Great. My concern isn't a fear of folks coming in. My concern is I've served this community, Chittenden County, in a social work capacity for about 23 years now. And we are underserving children and families, especially the homeless population. The solution is right now and has been, unfortunately, to put these folks in various hotels that pay the cheapest or offer the cheapest rate. They are not housed with the right kind of people you would want vulnerable children living in. And so there's also the mental health aspect of this as well that we're failing because we don't have enough treatment facilities for young children and whatnot. So my concern is that we're going to invite thousands of people into a community that also complains of housing shortages, and we're already stressed out that it's going to make a situation worse.
Tim, let me ask you,
my concern.
When you say we're going to invite people into these communities, what do you mean by that? What's your worry that connects this idea of being a sanctuary city to an invitation?
Well, then a sanctuary city. I'm using the wrong terminology.
No, I hear what you're saying, but it sounds like what you're thinking, and please clarify for me, is that saying a community is a sanctuary city is inviting more people into the community who want to take advantage of that designation. Is that your concern here or your fear?
Yeah, and I missed the first part, but I'm assuming we're talking about taking in Syrian refugees and other refugees.
No, in fact, we're not, and that's a good distinction to make, so thanks for bringing that up. Syrian refugees and the idea of refugees coming to this country or this state or to the Rutland area, that would be through a federal program. It's not undocumented refugees. These are refugees who come in through the refugee resettlement program and are placed in a community. And there are a lot of conversations going on, Tim, you're right, about resources and how that would work. And the first refugees are scheduled to arrive in Rutland as early as next month. What we're talking about here is basically a policy that communities put in place that says, here's what we're not going to do and here's what we are going to do when it comes to talking about people's legal status in this country. Our law enforcement officers will not ask about your legal status if they pull you over for a traffic violation. So it's more of a question of what kinds of conversations are going on and where does this question of what is your immigration status come into play and how often is that information conveyed to the federal authorities. But to Tim's point, Leslie Holman, he's worried that this will be a drain on resources, it sounds like, you know, regardless, that some resources will be pulled away from native-born Americans.
And you know, simply that's not the case. Again, you know, if you're talking about, number one, an undocumented community, they're not eligible for many of these resources. So, you know, again, that's the distinction between the refugee, because that's not where they're going and that's not what they're getting. And I know from in the past on some of the research that I've done, there hasn't been any kind of indication that people have fled and come to a sanctuary city. And in fact, you know, we saw that Burlington has done this, and you can get a driver's license, you can get an identification, even if you are undocumented.
And that's a state ID that you can get.
That's correct. Sorry. And we didn't see tons of people, you know, coming out of the woodwork to live here because of that. So, you know, I think it's an important distinction.
Let's go to Ken, who's calling in from Rouse's Point, New York. Hi, Ken. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, just one comment about the Vermont identification for illegals. There was a tremendous amount of fraud associated with that program. Granted, it was out of state, but there was a lot of fraud. My comment about sanctuary cities, or I guess my question is, with undocumented aliens residing in like Burlington, they're gonna have a make use of city services in one form or another. Now, who's paying for that? Because if they're undocumented, and let's assume they're working, I'm pretty certain that not every illegal alien is paying taxes.
Ken, thanks for your call. Let's put that to Leslie Holman and talk, Leslie, about, first of all, the question of taxes and who's paying taxes, and then, again, accessing city services.
You know, again, with regard to the tax issue, many undocumented pay taxes anyway, because there's certain benefits down the road that someone might get. Also, if there is ever some kind of ameliorative program, if you can show that the person has paid their taxes. So in fact, these are people that get what's called an ITIN because they can't get a Social Security number. So number one, you've got people putting into the system. Number two,
although not everybody, right?
I mean, if
you're working under the table, if you're not registered in a job, you're not paying taxes.
No question about it. So, I mean, you know, obviously not everyone is paying taxes, so they're not covering themselves. And again, there are, you know, depending on what services are available, you know, the truth be told, many, many, many don't avail themselves anyway because why? They're frightened. Even when they hear that, you know, that there may not be, you know, retribution or there are any negative consequences. I think if you were to look at the amount of people using those types of services, you'd find it's very low.
What about this question? Also, just very briefly, Ken mentioned that this ID card that is not the same as a driver's license, it's a driver's privilege card. There was found to be fraud in that, and there was found to be a lot more people actually taking advantage of that card than the state had originally anticipated. Now, some of that high number may have been because people were unclear that they needed more documentation to get an enhanced driver's license than before, but there also was some fraud associated with that.
And there was. And, you know, the thing is, they know about the fraud because it was detected. And, you know, I actually saw some interesting things that had come by my office. And you know what? It was people trying to say that they lived here when they didn't. And we were able, you know, that's when the system works. The system said these are people who are not entitled. And the fact that they knew that it occurred, I mean, you know, in any kind of system for anything, you always have someone who's going to try and run around the system. And that may be a school kid not paying for milk on the line.
We're talking about the idea of sanctuary cities today. And coming right up, we're going to hear from the mayor of Somerville, Massachusetts. Somerville has been a sanctuary city since 1987. So we're going to learn a little bit about that community's experience and have more of your comments and questions. You can keep them coming by posting on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or by calling 1-800-639-2211. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking about the concept of sanctuary city, a community that says it won't take immigration status into account in official city business or law enforcement interactions, and won't follow the guidelines set forward by ICE, the Federal Immigration Enforcement Agency, in regards to handing undocumented people over. In August, then-candidate Donald Trump declared that as president, he would withhold federal dollars to these places.
Block funding for sanctuary cities. We block the funding. No more funding. We will end the sanctuary cities that have resulted in so many needless deaths. Cities that refuse to cooperate with federal authorities will not receive taxpayer dollars, and we will work with Congress to pass legislation to protect those jurisdictions that do assist federal authorities.
Again, that was Donald Trump speaking in August in a clip there from CNN. His words have not stopped Burlington, Winooski, or Montpelier from continuing to work towards becoming sanctuary cities, and South Burlington is debating the issue. Somerville, Massachusetts has been a sanctuary city for nearly 30 years. Joining us on the phone now is Joseph Curtatone, that city's mayor. Mayor Curtatone, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thanks, Jane, for having me on. Glad to be on the show.
Why did Somerville become a sanctuary city in 1987?
Well, 1987, Somerville, like more than 300 other cities, you know, counties or states, declared themselves sanctuary city because they wanted to explicitly state they would not participate in the profiling of potential of individuals based on their immigration status as a reason to stop or question them. And they did it to further public safety because, as it was stated by one of your earlier guests on the show, you know, police chiefs, law enforcement, cities and towns, we need everybody's engagement in the community, everyone who's living in our cities and towns to help solve problems around public health and public safety. And the fact is, Somerville, since 1987, since we've been a sanctuary city, crime has gone down 52.9%.
Isn't that true for the country as a whole, though? I mean, if you look at crime statistics since 1987, the entire country has seen a significant decrease.
Well, crime has gone down, but it certainly belies the assertion by others that, you know, undocumented immigrants commit more crimes than citizens. In fact, that's not true. All known sociologists, criminologists, economists, studies have showed that during the greatest wave of undocumented immigration throughout the 90s, undocumented immigrants can commit substantially fewer crimes than citizens.
So, Mayor Curtatone, what does this actually mean now in practice for Somerville? Can you tell a little bit about or give us an example of, you know, what it might mean to be a sanctuary city right now in Somerville, some of the things I could access?
I think the simplest way to put it is, look, we're not going to participate in any program where if you're getting stopped because your taillight in your car is busted, question you on your immigration status or hold you on a blind immigration detainer. I mean, the federal courts have found that that approach, which was part of the Field Secured Communities program, was unconstitutional. So Somerville, I believe, has the most progressive and compassionate police department in these United States. We believe we need to engage all our stakeholders and in our approach to community-based policing to solve problems before they become crimes. So we work and engage everyone in our community, especially our foreign-born population. And Somerville speaks 52 languages from countries from around the world, and more than a third of our population does not speak English as a first language. We don't know the exact number, we have a significant segment of our population that is undocumented. But they're our neighbors, they're our friends, they're our families. They go to school with our kids. They're a vibrant part of our incredible economy, an important part of our community and quality of life. And we're not going to do anything that jeopardizes the trust they have in us to protect them, to work with them, to make us a better community.
You know, one misconception that people sometimes have about sanctuary cities is this idea that police officers don't ever cooperate with ICE on immigration issues or detain somebody who is out of status. Can you talk about what happens in Somerville if somebody, for example, commits a violent crime and is a non-documented immigrant? What happens?
We work and cooperate with all our federal law enforcement agencies. In fact, Somerville and communities like Somerville that are sanctuary cities, many of us have officers assigned to the FBI, to the ATF, DEA, and ICE. And if you commit a crime, you're a violent person, you don't get a free pass in our communities. We're going to work with those agencies or work on ourselves to investigate and arrest you and work to have you deported. But there needs to be a criminal warrant or charges around that are either a violent offense or violent felonies. You are, in general, a dangerous person. You don't get a free pass. We want you out of our community. But we're not just going to, with one broad brush, just question people on their immigration status because they look different from you and I, or we think they're an immigrant that might be undocumented. And that will not be the means of why we hold people.
What would it actually mean for Somerville if Donald Trump came through with his threat to deny federal funds to sanctuary cities?
Well, we really don't know. But for example, on the federal grants alone, we receive several million dollars, I believe a little over $6 million in federal grants. Grants that go to help feed our children in our school lunch program or promote public safety and homeland security or education around different education programs. So the very programs where President-elect Trump has spoken to those vulnerable populations in the urban centers that he claimed that the Democrats and people like Hillary Clinton had forgotten or neglected for years that he wanted to help, this was really contradict everything he was saying. So I want to, even though I didn't support him, still respect our democratic institutions and give the president-elect the benefit of the doubt when he says he wants to be the president of all people. So if he means that, if he means what he said to these communities and populations, which he claims have been so neglected by the institutions in Washington, then I would hope he'd surround himself with people who have common sense and take a very prudent and practical approach to this notion that you can hang a Damocles of funding or the very people that need it as a means to bring them to their knees to comply with a policy or law that just doesn't help make our country great.
Well, and it should be said that there are a lot of questions about what President-elect Trump actually could do in terms of pulling federal funding and certain laws that suggest only funding that actually goes towards immigration enforcement or could be tied to it could actually be pulled. So it remains to be seen what could actually happen there. But I take your point. What advice would you give to Vermont communities that are talking about this or are working to become or have said they are now sanctuary cities, given that Somerville has been one for 30 years?
I think it's important that we cannot run away to remember, we cannot run away from who we are, our democratic principles. Now's the time. If we're going to stay great as a nation, we need to double down on our civility, our compassion, our humanity, watching out for our fellow man. We have more than 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country. And why are they here? For a better life for themselves, their family, and their children, escaping horrific conditions in some cases, and countries where our foreign policy has destabilized those countries. So they're seeking the one bastion of democracy and civility and humanity they can find in the arms of this country who is based on democratic principles, whose shores have been open for those who've been cast away. And we can't run away from that. If we're going to stay great, then we need to embrace this population. Let's work as a society. Let's hope that President-elect Donald Trump's self-proclaimed business acumen and deal-making and problem-solving can come to play in Washington to deliver this result, fix the broken immigration system. Don't put that unnecessary burden on law enforcement. That's not our job. We should give an opportunity for those who want to be part of this country, part of our communities, to help it continue to be great, that opportunity to do so. We can't run away from where we are. Somerville certainly will not. What's at stake here is the very democratic principles, the principles of democracy that founded this nation.
That's Joseph Curtatone. He's the mayor of Somerville, Massachusetts. Somerville has been a sanctuary city since 1987. Mayor Curtatone, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too. And we're talking with immigration attorney Leslie Holman as well today about sanctuary cities. We're getting multiple perspectives here. Our number, if you have a question or a reaction or a comment to share, is 800-639-2211. You can also post a comment on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. But that number again, 1-800-639-2211. We have to go to another break, but before we do, we were talking a moment ago with the mayor, Leslie, about this idea of funding being pulled, federal funding. And Mark wrote in to say, please tell me what happens on the local level if the federal government, with President Trump at the helm, actually makes good on his threats to pull various federal funds from city and states that establish themselves as sanctuaries. I'd really like to know, because there's a chance that without this federal money, various programs will not have adequate funding without raising revenue locally.
You know, and of course, and I understand that concern. The hard part, Jane, is the president-elect hasn't given any particulars. We really have no idea what he would do. And, you know, as the mayor said, I mean, it's, you know, the whole risk is you're going to be pulling something away, robbing Peter to pay Paul, so to speak, you know, by taking, you know, perhaps money or funding or food away from children. But we don't know. We really have no idea. And I think that may be the reason that, you know, states that are saying, well, I'll look and see, or I'll wait and see, is that they can see if there's a balancing act or maybe an argument to be made that some level of funding that would be pulled is not related to immigration. So
we got a note from Jim in Williston who says, I'd like to know how many undocumented aliens your guest has living in her home. I consider America my home, and people that come here illegally are breaking and entering and then taking advantage. Hang on a moment. Taking advantage of what we have to offer. I view that the same as somebody coming into my house and setting up residence. How would you respond?
Number one, whether or not I don't feel that anyone, we don't have illegal people. The other thing that, again, you know, you're missing the point, is that everyone that is here is not someone who has jumped the system. And really, this is where the mayor said, you know, we need a comprehensive reform, because the system is so broken that, you know, we're protecting, we need to protect people that have been hurt by our system, that we've caused their problem half the time. So
why do you say that? We've caused their problem.
Because our immigration system's well over 30 years old, some longer than that, and they don't have a means to deal with it. For example, we want milk in Vermont. We have a hell of a time getting people to help us with the cows. If we had a system, but there is no system. We've got ag workers, but we have temporary ag workers. Well, you know, a good cow will be milking all year. We're short those provisions. Fix those provisions, and then you will see less either undocumented Or again, something that says someone's out of status immediately, and there's no forgiveness. And you know, build in if you're an accountant and you need an extension, you file one. Give us changes like that, and you're going to see a decrease in, you know, in what people will say, illegal immigration.
Well, you just mentioned Vermont farm workers, and coming up in just a moment, we're going to speak with a representative of Migrant Justice. That's an organization that works with farm workers in Vermont, often undocumented farm workers, and we're going to get the perspective of Will Lambeck in just a moment on what he sees in this idea of sanctuary city and if it goes far enough or if it's a worthy idea. Our number, if you'd like to weigh in, is 800-639-2211. You're listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're looking at the idea of sanctuary cities. What does it mean being a sanctuary city in practice? Will it change anything for Burlington, Winooski, and Montpelier from what they're already doing? We've been getting some of the details from Leslie Holman, a Burlington-based immigration attorney, and we're hearing other voices as well. How about yours? Call 1-800-639-2211, or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Carry on the conversation there. Peter from Woodstock says, I'm distressed about a wide trust and respect gap between persons who see the large number of unauthorized residents as a legal compliance problem and those who are associated with sanctuary cities. It seems to me that sanctuary city advocates do not consider 11 million unauthorized residents as much of a problem. Well, we'd love to know your thoughts. 800-639-2211. Let's bring another voice into the conversation as well. Will Lambeck is a staffer at Migrant Justice. It's an advocacy organization that works with migrant farm workers in Vermont. Will, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
What do you think about this idea that Montpelier, Burlington, and Winooski have all declared themselves sanctuary cities since the election?
Well, we see any public official declaring support for their immigrant neighbors here in the state of Vermont as a positive step. But whether you call it sanctuary or not, the important thing is that cities and towns here in the state of Vermont follow the wishes of the vast majority of Vermonters, which is to not be dedicating our state and local resources to have police officers or anybody else in the state of Vermont go out of their way to be enforcing immigration policy that most Vermonters find to be abhorrent and antithetical to our values as a state.
So do you see this as just a reiteration of what policy and practice already is in Vermont?
It very well could be, and at the top of your show, you were talking about the state's fair and impartial policing policy, and that's a policy that's been developed over a number of years, and we think is a very strong framework for all police departments in the state to be saying that as departments, we are going to engage in bias-free policing. And part of that bias-free policing is not to be treating immigrant Vermonters any differently, not to be asking about immigration status based on, you know, the color of somebody's skin or the language that they speak or their accent, and not to be going out of our way to be devoting resources to responding to requests from federal immigration officers.
Why shouldn't Vermont follow requests from federal immigration officers and follow federal policy and federal recommendations?
That's a very good question. The short answer is because many of those requests from immigration agents are unlawful. And the courts have found over and over again that these so-called detainers that immigration place on people who have had contact with state or local law enforcement cause unconstitutional detentions. And there have been prisons and jails and police departments around the country that have been found liable for holding people unlawfully based on a request from some immigration agent sitting somewhere who thinks, oh, just because this person has a Spanish surname, why don't I put a detainer on them? And they've been put on American citizens even.
Do you think Vermont is doing what it should in this regard already then, given what you see as Vermont's fair and impartial policing and what you see as good policy in not asking for these things?
Well, the policy framework is one thing, and we think it's quite strong, although it could always be strengthened. But the implementation is another. Most departments in the state have implemented the full fair and impartial policing policy that the state legislature has mandated. But some departments have yet to do so, including Burlington Police Department, for example. While the mayor and city council are talking about sanctuary status, the police department is actually operating on an outdated fair and impartial policing policy. So at the very minimum, we would seek all departments in the state to follow the law by implementing the state policy and to go the extra mile in implementing those provisions that are in the policy but that aren't required.
I should say we invited Burlington Police Chief Brandon Del Pozo to be on the program. He wasn't available to be on today, but we'll come back to those questions with him again, Will. What worries you about the incoming Trump administration as far as undocumented immigrants is concerned?
Yeah, so let me back up a little bit, and that Migrant Justice was formed by the community of immigrant dairy workers here in the state of Vermont. There are about 1,500 immigrants, mostly from the country of Mexico, really working to sustain our state's dairy industry. Simply put, Vermont wouldn't have a dairy industry right now were it not for immigrant workers. And most of those immigrant workers are denied an opportunity to come in with visa or with status, and so most are undocumented. So, of course, there's a lot of concern about the language that's coming from Trump. However, the fact of the matter is that mass deportation is already a fact of life for many immigrants living in the state of Vermont. The Obama administration has deported 2.5 million immigrants, many of them from our dairy farms here in the state of Vermont. So the threat isn't anything new, but it certainly could grow more severe under the Trump administration. And so we're looking to state officials to stand strong in the face of that by saying, we aren't going to be providing our resources to help carry out this policy that runs counter to the values of our state.
Will Lambeck is part of the advocacy group Migrant Justice. Will, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about sanctuary cities. You can leave a comment for us now or later on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Sam calling in from Essex. Hi, Sam. Go right ahead.
Hello. I've got a question. In the 1950s, the nation kind of took on the sanctuary city as a whole. And at that point, basically created something called white flight. I guess what my concern is that I don't think that Vermont it lacks in funding or the ability to actually house people and stuff. It's just a matter of that. Do we want are there policies in place to basically keep our population with the funding necessary to sustain this in those communities and not have migration in creating segregation?
Sam, do you mean that you think by being a sanctuary city, a community like Burlington would be encouraging white residents to leave the city?
Well, yeah, because unfortunately, I don't think it's encouraging it. I think the thing is that we have to be realistic about where we live. I'm a fifth-generation Vermonter. This is one of the whitest communities in the country. And in as much as we are open to involving all policies and procedures, the reality is that many of the community people came here because they're also very sheltered and they like the perfect little pristine world. And on paper, this looks great, but I do have a lot of concerns about a lot of the wealth, the older financiers who live in our community, basically pulling up roots and moving just outside of these areas and creating segregated population densities.
Sam, thanks for your call. Leslie, do you see any evidence of that happening or any idea that might?
No, I don't, because it really, you know, and Sam, I first of all, we don't have, and we've shown that people have not fled to places that are considered to be a sanctuary city. And again, this is not an issue where people wouldn't where the government couldn't do its job against criminals. And I beyond me to see, and there's never been any information that being a sanctuary city would make someone leave or make a certain population leave.
Leslie, I'm curious about your perspective, though. You are an immigration attorney. You work with people who are trying to immigrate here legally, who are trying to go through the proper channels. Why doesn't this undermine their efforts or cheat the system in some way? And why is this something that you are supportive of?
You know, it's a good question. You'll hear that all the time. Oh, well, I did it the right way. Everybody else should do it the right way. And, you know, again, I don't mean to keep going back, but again, even the mayor touched on it for many reasons. Number one, we don't have a system that works. So you see so many people that are a result that are here and are not these people that, you know, people are afraid of and saying they're dangerous, number one. Number two, it's who we are. It is humane. And people go, they don't have what they need to get here. So there's no other alternative, really. And this is a way to keep us, keep the country, well, number one, who we are, keep the economy that we need, and be human.
Leslie Holman is a Burlington immigration attorney. She served as president of the American Immigration Lawyers Association from 2014 to 2015. Leslie, thanks for being on the program again.
Thank you, Jane, for taking an interest in such an important subject.
Now, our annual music show is 1 week away. I can't say that's quite as important as a subject, but it's always fun. We have a specific request for you this year. Tell us what song really says 2016 to you. Think back on all the things that you experienced this past year and what music was the soundtrack for those stories. Maybe the song that got you through the political season, or the one that represents a new friendship you made this year. Serious and poignant stories are also welcome. You can tell us your song and share your story by recording a voice memo on your smartphone and email it to vermontedition@vpr.net. We will track down the music and we might feature your story on the annual music show, which is next Wednesday. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.